So good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining on such a hot day as today. And so in the next coming 60 minutes, let's say, I'm going to be talking about using the cloud in combination with Silverlight. It's the goal of this talk to give you an overview of the possibilities of Windows Azure. That's going to take a very short amount of the time that we have foreseen for this webinar. And now for the rest, I'm going to be, let's say, migrating a Silverlight application into Windows Azure. And we're going to see how we can do that in a phased type of migration so that we phase out the migration into several steps. Let me first introduce myself. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I'm a Microsoft Regional Director and an MVP. I'm working at Ordina, Belgium, which is a large consultancy firm where I work as .NET architect at for Silverlight, WPF, and ASP.NET projects. I'm a speaker at many conferences. You can meet me at Tech Days in Belgium, but also international conferences such as TechEd and NDC. I have my own user group here in Belgium, which is Visuge, which you can reach from www.visuge.be. I've written a book on Silverlight, which is called Silverlight 4 Data and Services Cookbook. You can see the cover on the slide there. And it also talks a bit about using Silverlight in combination with Windows Azure. I've put up my blog, my email, as well as my Twitter. You can reach me by mail or by Twitter. And you can download the slides as well as the demos from my blog later today. Okay, so the goal, as mentioned, is of course talking about the combination Windows Azure and Silverlight. I know that some of you probably have not done anything with Windows Azure, or probably already heard about Windows Azure, but have not done any real work with Windows Azure. For that, I have foreseen a small introduction to Windows Azure, which is going to take about 10 minutes. And also in there, I'm going to, when we take a look at the different parts of Windows Azure, going to explain you how these different parts can be interesting for the Silverlight developer. And then we're going to take a look very quickly as well at the tools that we need to develop for Windows Azure. And then we're going to dive into the main part of the presentation, which is going to be moving Silverlight applications into the Windows Azure Cloud. As I mentioned in the introduction, it's going to be a phased migration. I'm going to show you that you can do an all-in approach, or but you don't have to do an all-in approach. We can move different parts of an existing application into Windows Azure. We're going to start by moving the database. Then we're going to move WCF services. Then the next step, we're going to move the Silverlight application into Windows Azure. Also going to take a little stop looking at RIA services, how we can move RIA services enabled Silverlight applications into the cloud. As a practical implementation of that, I'm going to show you how we can use Azure as an intermediate layer for a Silverlight in-browser application that needs to use Twitter. That's the first part. In the second part, I'm going to be looking at how we can use blob storage in combination with our applications built in Silverlight. We're going to take a look at how we can work with files that are stored in Windows Azure in blob storage, as well as the ZAP, so the entire Silverlight application, how we can move that into blob storage. And if we have time, we'll also take a very quick look at how we can use Windows Azure in combination with Windows Phone 7. So that's the agenda. Let's take a look first at what Windows Azure really is. So Windows Azure is in fact nothing but a cloud platform. A cloud platform is, as the sentence on the slide there says, an enormous, let's say, an unlimited amount of computing resources that are available for us to use whenever we need them. And if we don't need them any longer, we can simply release them back into the cloud. So that brings with it a lot of advantages, such as the fact that as soon as we need a particular resource, we can have it at our disposal. And if we don't need it any longer, there's no need to keep paying any maintenance costs on the servers because we haven't actually physically bought the servers. We are just using them from the cloud. So being capable of getting resources when you need them and releasing them is typical for the cloud. Now, Windows Azure is a practical implementation of the cloud, in fact, of the cloud platform. It's the Microsoft implementation. Windows Azure is in fact an operating system for the cloud. Now, it is much more than just a regular operating system. It is an internet scale operating system that manages all the thousands and thousands of servers that reside in the Microsoft data centers, which is in fact the Windows Azure cloud. What are some of the most important features? Well, of course, computing power. We have a vast amount of computing power available with Windows Azure, as well as storage. It offers us scalability. We can add extra servers or server resources to the amount that we have at our disposal at any time, and we can release them when we need, when we don't need them anymore. With Windows Azure, the development is actually quite familiar. It is nothing really different from using or from building regular applications. It's also integrating in Visual Studio, but I'm coming back to that later on. So as mentioned, it is an operating system for the cloud. And it is actually much more than what you think of with the term operating system. It offers us computing power, and we can run code inside of the cloud. That's mostly ASP.NET applications, web services, those kinds of things. But also other things such as different servers can be run inside of the cloud. Storage, Windows Azure offers us an unlimited amount of storage for files, that is. And we'll see that later on where we can use that in combination with Silverlight. We can also, if we want to, connect with Windows Azure servers from within our own on-premise services, so that we make like a network between on-premise and cloud servers. So Windows Azure manages all that, so the software behind Windows Azure, the cloud operating system, manages all these things. Now, Microsoft really is committed to the cloud. What do I mean by that? Well, in fact, in the industry today, we speak about three different types of cloud implementations. We have the infrastructure as a service, the platform as a service, and the software as a service. Windows Azure, in fact, focuses on the platform as a service, which offers us a platform which is already fully enabled. We don't need to do any maintenance on the hardware nor the software. It is just a platform there for us that we can, on which we can host our applications. So Microsoft is focusing mostly on the platform as a service. Another type of implementation is infrastructure as a service. That is, in fact, more or less what Amazon is doing today. They are offering servers on which we can install any operating system. And a layer higher in the abstraction is, in fact, software as a service. That is software hosted inside of the cloud. And that is, for example, Office 365. So that is applications that we can use directly as hosted in the cloud. And this slide shows more or less the same. Depending on the different type of cloud implementation, you see that the amount of things that we have to manage manages every time. So if we simply buy a package, a software package, we have to do everything ourselves. We have to buy network, we have to buy servers, and so on and so forth, operating system, all the way up to the applications. It's all our own responsibility. If we then move to the infrastructure as a platform, the lowest level things are being done by the vendor, just up on the level of the operating system, which we normally have to do ourselves. Microsoft's Windows Azure then is a platform including operating systems that are automatically being patched for us. We don't have to do any maintenance on these. Is the platform as a service, and we are responsible just to write the applications and host the data. And host data, in fact, is providing data that we can use. And then software as a service is, in fact, nothing that we have to do ourselves anymore. It is entirely done by the vendor. Now, the parts of Windows Azure, there are several parts that we can use inside of Silverlight applications. I'm going to show you which ones are interesting now. So the computing power is, in fact, hosted services. Hosted services allow us to run code inside of the cloud. We have the rep role, which is a role is, in fact, an instance that can do work for us. So we have the rep role and the work role. The rep role is, in fact, nothing more than IaaS in the cloud, IaaS more or less as a service, allowing me to run ASP.NET applications or services inside of the cloud. A worker role is the capability to run any executable in the cloud. And so if we want to run, for example, PHP or another database server, that is possible, we can do that inside of a worker role. Of course, Silverlight is going to be capable to work with this web host because Silverlight is in fact most of the time hosted inside of an ASP.NET application. It's not necessary, but we can do it. If you want to have Silverlight communicate with a WCF service, it will communicate. It can communicate with a service hosted inside of the web role. Come on, there we go. The second part is Azure Storage. Azure Storage, as mentioned in the beginning, is a scalable, let's say almost unlimited amount of storage capability we have inside of the Windows Azure Cloud. Each Windows Azure account has 5 storage accounts, and one storage account can store up to 100 terabytes. So when you can, when you're capable of filling that up, you're already using quite a big, big application. So it's an enormous amount of data that you can store in your Windows Azure storage. It is auto-scaling. Every file that is being placed in the Windows Azure storage will be replicated a few times, and it is capable of coping with a massive amount of traffic. These things are available through a RESTful API, so it is callable over the internet, but also accessible from Windows Azure Compute. 3 parts actually make up the Azure storage, that is blob storage, which is the file storage, and we'll take a look later on at how we can use blob storage from Silverlight to store, for example, videos, images, or even the ZAP file. We can also use table storage, which is like a database, but it is not a relational database, I'm sorry. So it's in fact unlimited amounts of rows that we can add to a table, and that is table storage. And queue storage is, like the word says it, a queue in which we can drop messages, and the other end of the queue, there is, for example, a communication between a worker role and a web role. We can use a queue storage there so that the web role drops something and the worker role picks it up later on, for example, to do an ordering system. The third part is SQL Azure. So we have Windows Azure Compute, the storage, and then the database. This is SQL Azure. That is nothing more than SQL Server in the cloud. In fact, I shouldn't say nothing more because it is the same operating, the same database server, the same SQL Server relational database, but now being delivered as a service with all the advantages thereof. It is highly available because it is managed in the cloud. At this point, this contains a database, reporting capabilities, and data syncing. The fourth part, and that's the last one, is App Fabric. App Fabric is a group of several different building blocks, let's say, that make up something that's called App Fabric. At this point, App Fabric includes access control, which allows me to control how I can give users access to my application. For example, I can do a single sign-on with Hotmail, for example, and making sure that the credentials from Hotmail are being transferred to my app. We can do Service Bus. The Service Bus is a messaging system that is, in fact, making it possible to do communication between an on-premise system and an in-cloud system application, or perhaps even with 2 on-premise services. It's nothing more than a messaging system, in fact. And then caching is a distributed caching. This is what was known previously as a Velocity. It's a distributed cache also based on the cloud. We won't be using these in this presentation. Now, why does a Silverlight developer need to know about the cloud? Well, it is my opinion that Silverlight, and combined with Windows Azure, can create more powerful applications. Because on one hand, so Azure is targeting web applications. They are highly scalable and highly available. While it is not that important for a ZAP file to be that highly available, perhaps it might be more important for services. Scaling is something that is very difficult to implement. The ZAP file is downloaded, so once that is downloaded, it's not that necessary to get high. It's not really often, let's say, that there's a lot of traffic on the ZAP file, but the services include and the database, they can get hammered in a high traffic situation, and their easy scaling is very welcome. So the Silverlight developer needs to know about Windows Azure to build even more powerful applications. If you want to use Windows Azure, what do we need? Well, of course, Visual Studio. That's quite normal, I think. The Azure SDK and Azure Tools is a download of about, 30 megabytes that installs everything inside of Visual Studio that you need, and also installs like a local cloud, which is the compute emulator and the storage emulator that we'll use later on. That emulator is in fact nothing more than a mini cloud running on your own machine, allowing you to test your applications instead of having to upload them to the cloud. And of course, you also need a Windows Azure account, which gives you access to the Azure portal. And that's the portal that you see here that we'll be using in just a few minutes. Okay. Now, let's now take a look at moving Silverlight applications to the cloud, which is the main part of this talk. A Silverlight application consists out of, in most situations, out of a few building blocks. A typical business application in Silverlight is a ZAP file, so the Silverlight application that's going to be downloaded to the client. And that has to be hosted somewhere. In many cases, it communicates with a service, and that service communicates back with the database. Now, many people think that to do a migration to Windows Azure, we have to do an all-in approach, which basically says everything has to move at the same time. And that's completely not true. We can do a phased migration. We can say, well, we just move the database at this point. Or we can say we move the database and the rest and the services. Or we can do an all-in approach as well. So these are the different blocks that we're going to take a look at. And we're also going to take a look at using RIA services in combination with Windows Azure, because there's something particular going on that you have to know if you want to move those that type of applications. Okay. So this is a typical scenario, a typical three-tier scenario, let's say. And so on the client side, we have the Silverlight application that's going to be downloaded, but it has to be hosted in some hosting site. So I'm taking those back together in one tier. Then we have the second tier in the middle, which is the service layer, which can be WCF, REST, whatever. And then we have the database. Okay. So the first building, the first moving of one of these building blocks is the database only. And we just want to move the database to Windows Azure. That's what you see here. This could be, for example, you are at a point that you need to buy a new database server, and you're thinking about, instead of buying new hardware yourself, just say, well, perhaps that cloud thing is a good thing for me. Let's take a look if I can just move the database into the cloud and leave the rest on my own web service as is today. Okay. So we have that typical Silverlight business application that communicates back with a WCF service, and that WCF service exposes me some data. And that data is, at this point, living in a SQL Server 2008 database. And our task is to take out that database from the local service and move that into the cloud. So move the database to the cloud. Well, the good thing is that this is a very easy thing to do. It is the very few steps that we have to do include creating a database on SQL Azure, using something called the SQL Azure Migration Wizard, which allows me to do exporting of my database, including my data, into the cloud database, and then change the connection string inside of my service configuration so that it will use the database hosted inside of SQL Azure. Okay, let's take a look at this. So I'm going to go away from this one, and I'm going to open Visual Studio first. Let me very quickly show you the application that we'll be working with. So this is the application. It is called the City Hotel Browser, allowing me to search for cities and insights of each city, giving me an overview of hotels, more or less like Expedia or Booking.com, but a little less complicated and less. It has a few less options, let's say. So this is the application, very basic application. As you can see, we have a list of cities. When I click on the button, I get a list of hotels for that city. Okay, let's close this one down. So assume that at this point, we have inside of our SQL Server that database. So the database engine is, in this case, my local SQL Express, I think it is on. So there we have the City Hotels database. And our first step is now moving that into SQL, into the cloud. So what I'm going to do, as mentioned in the slides, is going first to windows.azure.com. No, this is not going well. Okay, go back. Okay. Shouldn't be zooming in. Okay, so I hope you can see it. It is windows.azure.com, and there I can log in with my account, and then I get several options, including database. So the windows.azure.com is the portal. From there, you can go to the compute part, that we'll do in just a second, database and the service bus, which you see here at the bottom. So let's open the database tab here. And it now shows me an overview of the database accounts that I have. So at this point, I have a server which is conveniently called VEXTMRS0M2. I guess no one at Microsoft is really figuring out those names manually. So anyway, so on this database server, I have my database city hotels. So that is, of course, because I have already done the migration. On this database, I can say I want to create a new database. So on this database server, let's say that I want to use my test database. And it can be of type web or of type business. A web is 105 gigs. And a business can go up all the way to 50 gigabytes. In the future, this will increase. Currently, this is limited to 50 gigabytes. So if you have a database that is larger than 50 gigabytes, what you need to do is split up your database. This is something to do with replication of databases between several data centers. So that's why it is currently limited at 50 gigs. So then I create my database. I'm not going to do that. I have already created mine here, which is called City Hotels. And it gets a fully qualified DNS name, as you can see here, VEX whatever dot database dot windows dot net. Okay, so now I have created the database. The next step in the migration is, of course, moving that data into that database. So for that, I can use something called the SQL Migration Wizard. That SQL Migration Wizard, you can find that on SQL Server Migration Wizard. There we go. And a SQL Migration Wizard is a project on CodePlex, so you can take a look at the source if you want to. I'm going to close that one down. So let's open that Migration Wizard. And in that Migration Wizard, I have the capability of now specifying what I want to do. Do an analysis of my database, or move the entire database. So I'm going to first do an analysis, and then take a look at the migration as well. So first analyze and then migrate. So I'm going to be moving my database. It is currently on my SQL Express instance. And that's fine. I'm going to move my City Hotels database. Script everything in there. There we go. Ready to generate. It's a small database, so that should be very fast. There we go. So as you can see, it also outputs BCP commands, which contain the data of my tables. So now I have everything ready on the client side, including scripts to generate the database again on my database and including data. And now I am arriving on the connection to my server. Let's jump back here. So I'm going to copy this fully qualified database name. And the username is my first name dash last name. And then enter the password. I think it's this one. Okay. So there we see the City Hotels, and then we can say next, and then it migrates the database. I'm not going to do that now because I've already done that previously to this webinar. So then we end up with a normal database, but now hosted in the cloud. We can take a look at that database using this Manage button that you see here. And that opens a management studio in the cloud, let's say, allowing me to manage my database inside of a Silverlight application, because this is in fact nothing but a Silverlight application. And I can see here that I have, apart from that nice moving animation that you see here, that you can see I have a city and a hotel table. I can take a look at the design of that table as well as the data that's currently in that table. In the table. Okay. Now, the good thing is that I don't have to use that. I can actually use also SQL Management Studio. I don't have to use that Management Studio in the cloud. So I can simply connect with that database engine, that's this one here, using my own credentials, of course. And then I end up with a database see here, oops, probably got disconnected at some point. Let's try that again. Now let's do a refresh here. There we go. So we have city and hotels database. There is no way to do select top 1,000 rows and stuff like that. That doesn't exist. That's not supported. You have to do it like this. Create two, select two. I wanted to use a new query window. And then we can execute queries from here and see our data as well. Okay. Now, we have moved our data to SQL Azure. The only thing at this point for our application is very simple. Like it was mentioned in the slide here. Let's go back to the slide. So we have done the first step, the second step. The only thing that we now need to do is change the connection string in the configuration of that web app that is using a Silverlight service. And then we are ready with the migration of the database. So this application, let's very quickly take a look at how this is constructed. So we have a Silverlight application. That Silverlight application is communicating with a service that is hosted in this point at the local host. So assume that this is our local or our own application service that server that hosts WCF services. So I'm connecting with this server, the local host 24070, and on that server a service called City Hotel Service is being executed. So the City Hotel Service is a WCF service, is a Silverlight enabled WCF service that gives me back a list of all cities and hotels by city. Now this has to communicate with the database, of course. I'm using Entity Framework here. And in my web config, I have simply changed the city hotel entities to be the connection string that uses the one in the cloud. I'm not going to scroll too far, because then you can see my password. But you see it is using the VEXTR and so on and so forth. So basically that's it. The only thing is that I have to do in my application code is change the web config for that service. Okay. So in fact, at this point, we are ready with the first step in the migration of our application. So we have moved the database. The second step is moving the service, moving the WCF service into the cloud. That's what you see here. So the blue is still at our own on-premise service. The yellow is going to be hosted in the cloud. So both the database, which is already there, as well as the service layer, which we want to move next. That service layer, we'll assume for now, is a WCF service. Silverlight communicates with that WCF service. It exposes me some data that I want to use inside of my application. The data is already migrated into SQL Azure. Let's now move that service into Windows Azure as well. Now, Silverlight, a little bit of side information, can communicate with both ASMX and WCF services. Both expose what is called a WSDL file. And the WSDL file is a web service description language file. And it's basically used by Visual Studio to generate a proxy based on the definition of that service. What we need to do is now move that service into Windows Azure. When we move that service, we can, if we move an existing service, we need to update, of course, references, so that Silverlight knows where to find that new service. Or we can simply also, if we have the service already inside of the cloud, connect from Visual Studio with that service inside of the Silverlight project. How are we going to do that? Well, the first step that we're going to do is creating a cloud project inside of our application, inside of our solution, I should say. There we are going to add a rep role, which is going to host the WCF service. That we are going to test in the compute emulator locally. When we are ready, we can update the Silverlight configuration so that we can that it points to the new service address. We're going to build that and host it onto the computing capabilities, so compute of Windows Azure. And then, of course, Silverlight needs to be redeployed as well because it now has to point to the service hosted inside of Windows Azure. Okay, let's take a look at these steps in action. Let me first go to the Windows Azure portal again. So here on the left, we have hosted services, storage accounts, and CDN, giving me the capability to give information about the about my subscriptions and so the storage the hosted services as well. So I click here on subscriptions, and then I arrive at my list of subscriptions. And as you can see here, this is my my subscription, and there is nothing in there at this point. So there's no service running at this point. Okay. So now I'm going to move my WCF service into Windows Azure. So I'm going to have to create, let's say, a virtual machine which can host my service. So it's going to host me an entire environment on which I can host my service. Okay. So I'm going to say, create me a new hosted service at this point. Okay. I'm going to give you the name. Let's call it City Hotel Browser. Let's see if that doesn't exist yet. Okay, that's fine. I can say where I want to host it. Let's say West Europe. I should say North Europe, in fact. Deploy to staging, that's fine. And let's give it a name. And now we arrive here at a point package location and configuration file. We don't know what to do at this point. So we have configured the service, but there's no code we can place in there at this point yet. So let's go first now to Visual Studio. Close this one down, and let's go to Visual Studio. There we go, City Hotel Browser. Okay. So, remember from the previous demo, we had the services inside of the same project as the web where Silverlight was hosted. I now extracted those and placed them inside of a different project, which is called Service Hosting Site, which is in fact at this point also an ASP.NET site. I had to extract them so that I could say that I just want to host services and a service project inside of Windows Azure. At this point, the website hosting Silverlight is not going to be moved into the cloud. Okay, so in order to move that service hosting site, the site that hosts the WCF services, into the cloud, what I need to do is add a cloud project. So I'm going to start by that. So I'm going to add to my solution a new cloud project. So in here, when you have the tools installed, you have a cloud project, an Azure project. I'm going to call that Windows Azure Project 6 for now. Say OK. Then I get the ability to say which roles I want to start with. At this point, I'm going to add existing websites. I'm not going to select anything here, but you can see that you can check an ASP.NET web role and a worker role, which allows me to do background processing, or even a Silverlight business app, which is a Silverlight Real Services application. So for now, we're going to leave that empty. Okay. Now that the Azure Project 6 here doesn't do anything at this point yet. Now we have to add the existing service hosting site into a web role. So I'm going to say web role in solution, select the service hosting site to be hosted in a web role. Okay. So what I've done at this point is saying to my service, well, I want you to execute the code that is coming from that service hosting site. So it's basically a role is like a manager that will execute the code that is inside of this project. We can configure this. We can say, well, I want this to be always available. I want this to run on two instances. It should be quite large instances or medium instances. Let's now say small. Save that. And then we can start building the project. I'm going to remove this one again from the project because I already have one that's doing exactly the same. Service hosting site, which is now in the City Hotel Browser cloud. Okay, so let's put this one as a startup project now. And let's run this. The only thing that I'm not sure of is which port it's going to use. So down here at the bottom, you see my mini cloud, so my local storage emulator and my local compute emulator being started. Okay, there we go. We can ask to visualize this thing. We can say, view me the compute emulator. And that compute emulator is now showing me that I have two roles that are accepting incoming responses for my service. So now my service is running on 127.0.0.1 port 83, and I think the name of the service is City Hotel Service, yes. So if I type City Hotel Service .svc, I am actually accessing that service, which is fine. Now, let's now have my Silverlight application communicate with that. So I'm going to start a new instance of this one. So if I now started another instance of the City Hotel browser test page, and if everything is working fine, should get the same cities list available to us. So what is now happening? My website, which is localhost 46181, which is the local website, the Silverlight from downloaded from my own server, is communicating with a service currently hosted on my local storage, on my local compute emulator, and that is going out to SQL Azure. So I'm sure that my application works fine, so that's a good thing. The last thing I need to do is now publish my application into the cloud. So I'm going to go to my browser, cloud application, and say publish. And then from that publish, I can say create a service package or deploy it directly from here. I'm going to create a service package now. Okay, and that builds me a CS package file and CS configuration file. I'm going to copy this into the Azure portal, and then I can say this is the package that I want to use, and this is the configuration file that includes things like how many instances I want to be executing my code. And then I'm actually ready with this. And there's nothing else I need to do. So I can say, okay, this will now upload. It takes about 20 minutes, so I'm not going to run this now. But from here, we are ready to go. The only thing I still need to do is, in my Silverlight application, change this reference to this web service, again, from 127.0.1.83 into a service, a URL that's actually pointing to the cloud service. Okay? So, this is actually the second step of our migration. Very quickly, I'm going to show you if we are... So, at this point, I was using a WCF service. What if I'm working with a REST service? So, WCF can communicate using REST as well. Well, there's, in fact, nothing really different. It still works in more or less the same thing. So instead of using the SOAP protocol, we are going to be communicating with the REST protocol, allowing me to also do my communication from my Silverlight application as well. So it's perfectly possible to move a REST service that communicates using XML or JSON to Windows Azure. And the steps for these are identical, and that's why I'm going to skip showing you these. It's exactly the same thing that you need to do. Create a cloud solution, and then host the service that instead of SOAP uses REST inside of that service. Okay, so I'm going to skip this demo just to win some time. Okay, now the third step of the migration is moving Silverlight into the cloud. Now, you may be wondering, what am I going to move then? Well, Silverlight, in fact, is nothing but is a client-side platform. So that works fine on a client. It's going to be downloaded to the client. But what happens with the hosting site? That's also possible to move that into Windows Azure. So the case is now, we already have a database hosted in SQL Azure. The WCF service is already hosted in Windows Azure. And now we need to move the Silverlight application and the hosting website into the cloud. So that means that the ZAP file will be included in that CS package that we're going to create from the hosting website. And that is going to be downloaded to the client also from the cloud. So we want to move the Silverlight hosting site to the cloud as well. That means that we either need to create another rep role or create another cloud project. Coming back to that in just a second. So I think the things on this slide I've already touched on. And so Silverlight is going to be downloaded to the client, but it needs some web context to be executed against. So that can be PHP, that can be HTML, but of course can be ASP.NET as well. The ZAP file is then downloaded from the hosted service. We can also place the ZAP file in Azure Storage. I'm coming back to that in just a second. But in fact, what we end up with is a site that is a web crawl, and that is now hosting the Silverlight application. So what we can do is, as mentioned, either add a second web crawl or add a second cloud project. Now, why is there a difference? Why can't I do that? Well, if you move it into the same cloud project, we are only going to have one URL, and we need to access the different cloud projects using different ports. If you want a different URL, you need different cloud projects. Okay, let's take a look. This one can be closed down, City Hotel Browser. Let's say Silverlight, that's this one. Okay, so the architecture of the application is rather still the same. The only thing that we now have is this website, the City Hotel Browser Web, which is hosting the Silverlight application. We are also going to move that into the cloud. So what we can do, as mentioned, is either add a second cloud project or move that website into another role in the same project. That's what I've done here. So as you can see here, I simply said add. I am not able to run this. Something is wrong, seems to be wrong here. There's no other web project, of course. So I've already set web rolling project, and I've moved this City Hotel Browser Web into another web role, which is now, what I end up with now is that I have two web roles available on other ports that can communicate with one another. And so, if we publish this now, I don't know if I still have the URL of the other one open. Let's see. Yeah, I still have it open. So the one from the previous demo was almost 2.6 megabytes. Now, I'm going to do the same thing now with this one. And it's picking up everything that is both in the service hosting website and the City Hotel Browser Web. And so in the directory that's popping up now, you see that this is now 9.8 megabytes. The reason is, of course, that the ZAP file is included here as well as some extra assemblies, of course. But the ZAP file is now included into this package as well, because we have the site that is hosting the Silverlight application now also packaged into this here. Okay, I'm not going to run it because it's, of course, exactly the same thing that you see. You can download the demos to look at them afterwards. Sorry. Okay. Now, what if you are working with RIA services? Will this also still work in the cloud? So the scenario is basically the same, but instead of communicating with a WCF service, we are going to use RIA services. And RIA services on the server side are going to be exposing data coming from a SQL Azure database over a server-side entity framework model. Again, we want to do the all-in approach, move everything to the cloud, but there are some particularities. Now, for the people who don't know RIA services, RIA services is I shouldn't say data access technology, but it's a type of technology allowing me to build a line of business applications that work with services in an easier fashion than with regular WCF. Because of the fact that we have code generation happening on the client. So what we do is we create server-side some services, and on the client side, code is being generated, making it possible on the client to communicate with these services. All in all, what we end up with is a project that more or less, a solution, in which we have a cloud, in which we have a Silverlight project and a web project that more or less seem like one project inside of the same solution, although it is still, in fact, two projects. Now, to work, we as services need some assemblies both on the client and within the Silverlight application and on the server. Now, that is an issue since RIA services is not installed into your Azure virtual machine, which is what is running on the Azure environment. So what you need to do is include the assemblies for RIA services into your within your deployment, and so that they will be available on your Azure virtual machine. So that's what I'm saying here. So we're going to add a web role to host the cloud project. I'm going to add a web role to the cloud project, and then I'm going to add my site with my services into that web role. That's the direction I should be going. Of course, update configuration, and then very important, update the copy local setting, which is by default false, for the RIA services assembly and set it to true. The Silverlight application, which includes RIA services code as well, also already has these assemblies embedded, so that will keep on working. Okay, let's take a look at this in a demo. So same application, but in this case, it is now being built with RIA services. Okay, so let's quickly take a look at what was constructed here. Close this one down. So we have the City Hotel browser, and then we have the City Hotel browser web, which has the EDMX again, but now has a city service, which is a RIA service. It's actually a domain service. That's this one here. So that exposes a method called getCities and getHotelsByCity. What we then do in the Silverlight application is specify this to have a RIA services link to City Hotel browser, which will generate code. It results in code being generated on the client. That's what you see here in the generated underscore code folder, which has a cityhotelbrowser.web.g.cs, which is in fact more or less comparable to a proxy, but it's more intelligent than a proxy. It also includes entities with all kinds of validation. But that is not what we are talking about. What we are talking about is moving this to Windows Azure. So instead of simply saying, well, go ahead and package this up by specifying a cloud project with a web role, the first thing I need to do is change so that my references for my RIA services assemblies are set to copy local true. There are three assemblies that are important on the server side for RIA services. And that is System Service Model Domain Services Entity Framework, System Service Model Domain Services Hosting, and Server. These three need to be set to copy local true, making sure that these assemblies are packaged inside of the package file that we are going to be uploading to our Azure VM. On the client, well, there is in fact nothing different that we have to do. And so when we deploy this package into the cloud, it will work including RIA services. That's the only thing I need to do to make sure that the RIA services application works inside of Windows Azure. So I think it's becoming clear now that more or less everything that I need to do when moving from a regular server to an Azure service, there's really not a lot of work to be done. In this case, it's quite normal that I have to set these copy locals to true because of the fact that RIA services is not known inside of the Azure portal or the Azure virtual machines. Okay, let's go back to the slides. The last thing I wanted to talk about in this part is how we can use Windows Azure as a Twitter intermediate for Silverlight applications. I think most of you know this, but anyway, by default, Silverlight will not communicate with a service hosted in a domain other than the domain in which it is hosted itself, unless that service exposes what is called a configuration, a configuration policy file that is allowing cross-domain calls. And so what we are doing in that case is a cross-domain call, which is basically saying, well, we are only going to be allowing the call to the service to be done if the service is either in the same domain or there is a configuration, a policy file on the root of the domain available. Now, if you want to build a Silverlight application that communicates with Twitter, you are in fact in big trouble, because Twitter does not expose such a policy file. There is on the twitter.com domain, there is no client access policy file available. So what we need to do to make it possible that our Silverlight application communicates with Twitter anyhow is introduce an extra service layer in between, like you can see here on this drawing. That service layer is being contacted by Silverlight Apps, and it itself, or it in its turn, will communicate with Twitter. Twitter will send back the results to my service layer, and that service layer will then be sending the results down to Silverlight. So we are introducing an extra layer of communication. Now, while this is all fine and dandy, this is not that easy to work with in case of your application becoming very popular. If you want to build a Silverlight application that communicates with Twitter, we need the intermediate service layer. But instead of hosting that on our own services, or on our servers, it might be a good idea to move this into Windows Azure. And if you know Seismic, they more or less do this as well for their Silverlight in-browser client. They also have an Azure intermediate layer that does the communication from the client to Twitter and vice versa. This is what I already explained. So by default, Twitter does not expose a client policy file. So if we want to have Silverlight communicate with that service, we need to go around it and introduce another service layer as an intermediate layer. So let me quickly show you what I've done here. So let's take a look at Twitter. That's the silver with a solution. So, let me make this a bit smaller here. So in my application, I have three projects. The SilverWitter web, which is hosting my SilverWitter application, which is a Silverlight application. And then the SilverWitter services, they are the services that are going to be the intermediate layer. Let's first take a look at the Silverlight application. The main page, as you can see here, has no code to Twitter. It communicates with something called Twitter service. That's a proxy. The Twitter service proxy, Twitter service client is the proxy from my intermediate service layer. You can see that here. So I have here a Twitter service that exposes a few methods. This is the interface here. Get public timeline, get trending topics. So I have my Twitter service, which communicates with Twitter. And so there's no code inside of my Silverlight application that directly communicates with Twitter. But I have my service layer, and that communicates with Twitter. As you can see here, I'm going to communicate with I'm going to ask, I'm going to send for the public timeline. That service layer, I am now going to place that in Windows Azure to have the benefits of automatic, or not automatic scale, but of possibilities of doing easy scaling. So I have here another cloud project to which I have added a web role, which is SilverWitter services. I simply deploy this into Windows Azure, and then I have to update in my Silverlight application, again, the URL of where the services are going to be hosted. And at that point, I'm not bothered with the fact that there is no client access policy file being exposed by the Twitter, by twitter.com. Okay. Let's now move to blob storage. It's going to be a very short chapter on blob storage. Blob storage is part of Windows Azure Storage, making it possible to do, well, storage. Blob storage allows me to store files, videos, images, other things that Silverlight applications can work with. Even if we want to put an XML file there, well, that's perfectly fine as well. Silverlight can access files hosted inside of blob storage. That's perfectly possible. One might ask, what if I want to, for example, build for example, an education site or a training site that has a number of videos on there, and I don't want to have everyone access my videos if they just have the link to that file. I just want to control access to that file. If you have that inside of a Silverline application, you can use something called shared access signatures. And what that means is that you have a service that you are going to be exposing. Your Silverline application sends a request to that service. That service generates, in communication with Blob Storage, a token, let's say, that is going to be valid for some specific amount of time. That token is then sent back to the client, and Silverline can then communicate or use that token as the URL for accessing that particular resource. That is called shared access signatures. I'm not going to go deeper in there, but you can make it possible to limit the access to some specific resource. Now, next to, and I'm going to show that the previous one in the next demo, but next to just storing images and videos, we can also store the Silverline ZAP file inside of the Windows Azure Cloud. Now, why would we on earth would we want to do that? Why just don't leave it where it is inside the Silverline hosting site? Well, by default, it is not possible to update just the ZAP file once our package has been deployed to Windows Azure. So what I mean by that is, out of the box, you just do this, your package deployment containing your ZAP file. If you want to just update your Silverline application but not your hosting website, you're in for a treat because you have to update everything. Unless, of course, you want to use the VM role, which allows you to do remote desktop access to your instance. It also allows me to do easy versioning of my Silverline applications. A few things that we need to be aware of is that if you want to store the ZAP file or the Silverline application inside of Blob Storage, we need to set the MIME type to application /x-silverlight-app. And also, and that is the same if you host your Silverline ZAP file on another server than the hosting site, you are going to be faced with cross-domain issues in two ways. Making sure that you have to, let's say that there's going to be cross-domain issues if you access a service, but there's also going to be cross-domain accessing anything in your application, because your ZAP file is not running on the same file, the same URL, same root URL as the rest of your Silverline, as the rest of your page. So it's cross domain in two ways. It can be solved, for example, by setting the enable HTML access to true. Okay, let's take a look at this. Let's close this one down. Take a look at Blob Storage. So as mentioned, inside of my Blob Storage, I can store, in fact, everything, videos, images, and so on and so forth. And that's exactly what I've been doing in this application. Let's run it first. So this is a Silverline application. And I'm going to say, show me an image that you see here. That is now coming from the Blob Storage. Now, how can I prove you that this is coming from Blob Storage? Well, let's take a look. There are several types of applications out there. We have CloudBerry Explorer, which I'm going to register later, of course. And then there is also the other Cloud Explorer, this one. Allowing me to give me an overview of my Blob Storage. So, in fact, Blob Storage is nothing more than, let's say, a disk in the cloud. One particularity is that you cannot place anything in the root except from folders, and folders are called containers. So I have here a test container which contains a few files, and that's that copy-paste file, and that's the one that you saw here being used. So in my Silverline app, I have simple image referring to jillclair.blob.core.windows.net/test, which is the name of the container, and then the JPEG file that I'm using here. The video, of course, is exactly the same. Let's go back and let's show the video. is downloading the video, probably at this point. Should be coming through in a second now. But it's basically the same. I'm just referring in my media element. There we go. Some sounds of nature. Butterfly here. So I'm just referring to I'm just having this media element refer to the source, which is the butterfly.wmv, which is hosted also in Blob Storage. That is very easy. Now, what if I want to access an XML file? Let's say that I'm going to read an XML file from the Blob Storage. I can do that using a web client. Now, that web client is going to access an XML, it's going to read out an XML in a domain other than the domain in which I'm hosting my Silverlight application. All right? Because of that, I need to have a client access policy file inside of the root of my gilclair.blob.co.windows.net. Now, the problem is that I cannot place a file in this directory. I cannot place a physical file on the root. There is a shortcut, however, by creating a container called $root, and in there I can place a client access policy file. And that is then exposing this client, XML here, on the root. So if I now go to gilclair.core.blob, there we go, .windows.net/client-access-policy, you see there is no container here, there's no test or root or whatever. I'm going to access that file. So, if I want to read out an XML file that is hosted on gilclair.blob.co.windows.net/test/whatever.xml, Silverlight is going to access that client access policy file first, as it does normally, and then it's going to allow me access to my XML file. So, it is very important if you want to do that, you need to make that root container, $root container, and place in there the file that you want to access. So that is like a shortcut to access files that are living in the root. Now the second thing that I talked about was moving the zap file into the cloud. Let me close this one down. So this solution called Remote Zap allows me to do exactly that. So, I have a Silverlight application, one of the most basic Silverlight applications, and it compiles into a file called remotezap.zap, which you can see here in the Solution Explorer as well. Now, I took this zap file and I placed it in a container called zap, and there is a file called remotezap.zap in here. And I replaced the value of the source parameter from the object tag for Silverlight by this URL. I'm going to delete this one. Let's run it. Yeah, it's building it, of course, every time again, but let's run it. It is hosting this on the local Azure storage, Azure Compute emulator, sorry. And it's just, I think, a red background, as you can see here. It's a zap being hosted on Windows Azure. Now, this zap file is being downloaded from the real blob storage that is. So it's not downloaded from the local storage, it's downloading that from the real remote storage. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about is Windows Phone and Azure. Now, the people who have already worked with Windows Phone, the development of Windows Phone is Silverlight. It's exactly the same API, but it is Silverlight code that you need to write Silverlight applications, Windows Phone applications. So, most things that I've shown you will work for Windows Phone as well. So you can also access, for example, an image hosted in Blob Storage. There's two places where Windows Phone and the cloud work perfectly in combination. The phone, which is quite normal, isn't always connected. There can be times that there is no connection coverage. So at that point, the phone is not always connected. The cloud, however, is always there when you need it. So that translates in two options. The phone calls the cloud. For example, you have an offline, you have a time of being offline because of there being no cellular coverage. At some point, there is new coverage available. The phone will then call the cloud to, for example, sync data. Again, we have done some local changes and we want to upload them to the client, to the server. It's possible. The cloud is always there. The phone can connect when it needs to. The other way around is actually the cloud calling the phone. And that is push notifications. I'm not going to talk about push notifications in this presentation, but it's possible to do push messages from a cloud service into the phone. So most things just work. Things like WCF communication, REST communication, the database being hosted in SQL, Azure. It's possible to use WCF data services. We've not talked about WCF data services, but it is possible. There's a client library for OData. XML, so REST and so on and so forth, are also capable of being used from the cloud. It is important, like the sentence says there, that the data, the smaller data is the better. And that's really important when you're working with mobile devices. JSON, for example, is very compact compared to XML and certainly compared to SOAP. So the smaller the amount of data that you want to communicate with, the better. One very important difference is that there is no need for a client access policy file, so a cross-domain policy file, when working with Windows Phone. So the intermediate Twitter service layer, is not needed if you want to build a Twitter client for Windows Phone. Windows Phone can at this point, that's the current version, let's say, not work with VIA services, not work with sockets or duplex bindings. This changes somehow in Windows Phone 7 Mango edition, but Windows Phone 7, the current edition, can't work with sockets. Okay. And then we're going to round up with the last demo, which I hope works. There we go. Okay, so let's first run the application. So this is actually an application that has both a phone part as well as a service part. At this point, it is connecting with the phone emulator, but I think it forgot to start up the services. I hope it didn't forget to do that. So it's running the service deployment now. Let's hope it works. So there we go. We have the services now being hosted for us. The web application around it as well. Come on, that's taking quite a long time. It's taking a very long time this time. Okay, there we go. So what I'm going to do is, this is the website. I'm going to register here. I'm going to very quickly register like this and register. Okay. So this is now the to-do application interface. In fact, I should now be able to, as you can see, it has some sample data here. Oops, I shouldn't have done that. Okay. So now I can access the application from the phone as well, working with the same services. and entering the password, which is Jill111. That is not my regular password, by the way, so don't go out trying it. We have a login error, which is not okay. Let's try that again. That seems not very good at this point. Let me very quickly check if I can figure out what is wrong at this point. So this seems fine. So the Silverlight, the Windows Phone application, has the authentication service, which is in the website, and that should be working. Okay, I'm gonna try creating once more the account. Don't think I typed my name wrong. I hope not. I'm gonna say register, test user, test at test.com, and let's say test as password, and once again test. So test user test. Oh, test 123, and let's say test 123. Okay, final test that we're going to try now. Test user, and then say test 123. Okay, doesn't seem to be working, but anyway, I'm going to skip this one. Okay, so sorry for that, folks. You can download it and take a look at what is wrong. So I think it's time to finish up. I hope I've shown you that Silverlight works in perfect harmony with Windows Azure. You can work in several phases. You don't have to do an all-in migration. You can use, move the database to SQL Azure. You can move the service layer to Windows Azure Compute, as well as move the Silverlight application also to another service instance. The blob storage is very useful if you want to communicate or if you want to store a lot of resources, videos, images, music files, and so on. And it's also useful for hosting the ZAP file.